Whoever you are, wherever you come from, whoever you love, we welcome you. I am Kathy Walker, and I am joined today by Saul Flanner and Jesse Young. I'd like to extend a special welcome to those of you who are with us for the first time today.
Today's chalice lighting is from Robin Williams in the 1996 film Jack, in which he plays the title character. Please, don't worry so much, because in the end, none of us have very long on this earth. Life is fleeting, and if you're ever distressed, cast your eyes to the summer sky when the stars are strung across the velvety night. And when a shooting star streaks through the blackness, turning night into day, make a wish and think of me. Make your life spectacular.
This summer was not everything I wanted it to be. I have yet to go to the beach, and I didn't make it to the drive-in. My attic office and studio have not been organized, and the piles in my office on campus have not been sorted. I didn't finish an article in time to respond to a call for papers seemingly meant for me, and I failed to update and send out the family letter I started over a year ago. There are numerous art projects I could have done with Kailani, plenty of romantic dates I could have done with Kailani, or with Saul. Not with Kailani. In the time I had available to me. They did not happen, and my summer list of could-haves, would-haves, and should-haves goes on and on. As a person who mostly lives without regret, the length of this list bothers me a great deal. I want to shake out my doubts, let go of my failures, and embrace what I know is an equally long list of joys acquired this summer. Uninterrupted time in a used bookstore, making sea urchins with my daughter, an unexpected thank you note from a student, stolen moments in front of the television, watching Orange is the New Black with Saul, conversations on the porch with my parents, walks to my in-laws' house, road trips and hotel stays, annual celebrations with friends, and this moment right here with my community. But it's been really hard for me to distance myself from that first list. So when Saul asked me again this week what I would tell my younger self, I couldn't think of an answer. I didn't even know what I would tell myself from 3 months ago. In third grade, we were required to keep a journal to practice our writing skills. My entry from May 13th, 1980 is a short one. Today, I had a bunch of work. I never did finish it. I have a lot to do. I was nine. I had a bunch of work. I never did finish it. I have a lot to do. That's a familiar refrain for me. Maybe for you too. So how do we shake our doubts, let go of our failures, and embrace the joys? I don't know, but I'm pretty sure it starts in this moment, with this community right here. Come, let us worship together.
Spirit of life, spirit of love, spirit of blessed community, come, sit with us. Be with us here, now, in this sacred space. We know there is much to be thankful for, but there is much sorrow in our hearts. Tragic events seem to surround us. A lot of us are scared. A lot of us are hurting. And sometimes the loss is hard to bear. We wish we could stop the pain. We wish we could turn back time just for a moment. Help us to move forward. Help us to enact meaningful change in our country, in our hearts, in our relationships with others. Help us to be there for ourselves and for each other. Help us to find renewed purpose. Help us to find the passion and the joy. Help us to build a future together, starting now. Amen.
This morning's reading is excerpted from How to Build a Time Machine by Stephen Hawking. Time travel was once considered scientific heresy. I used to avoid talking about it for fear of being labeled a crank. But these days, I'm not so cautious. Everything has a width and a height and a length, but there is another kind of length, a length in time. Traveling in time means traveling through this fourth dimension. Let's indulge in a little science fiction for a moment. Time travel movies often feature a tunnel through time. A time traveler, a brave, perhaps foolhardy individual, steps into the tunnel and emerges who knows when. The concept may be far-fetched, and the reality may be very different from this, but the idea itself is not so crazy. Physicists have been thinking about tunnels in time, too. What's more, we've given them a name, wormholes. The truth is that wormholes are all around us, only they're too small to see. If you look closely enough at anything, you'll find holes and wrinkles in it. It's a basic physical principle, and it even applies to time. There are tiny crevices, wrinkles, and voids in time, down at the smallest of scales, smaller even than molecules, smaller than atoms. We get to a place called the quantum foam. This is where wormholes exist. Tiny tunnels or shortcuts through space and time constantly form, disappear, and reform within this quantum world. And they actually link two separate places and two different times. Unfortunately, these real-life time tunnels are way too small for a human to pass through. But here's where the notion of wormhole time machines is leading. Some scientists think it may be possible to capture a wormhole and enlarge it many trillions of times to make it big enough for a human or even a spaceship to enter. If both ends were in the same place and separated by time instead of distance, a ship could fly in and come out still near Earth, but in the distant past. Let's imagine for a moment I'm throwing a party, a welcome reception for future time travelers. But I'm not letting anyone know about it until after the party has happened. I've drawn up an invitation giving the exact coordinates in time and space. Maybe one day, someone living in the future will find the information on the invitation and use a wormhole time machine to come back to my party, proving that time travel will one day be possible. In fact, my time traveler guests should be arriving any moment now. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. As I say this, no one has arrived. What a shame. So why didn't the experiment work? One of the reasons might be the well-known problem of with time travel to the past, the problem of what we call paradoxes. Paradoxes are fun to think about. Through the wormhole, a scientist can see himself as he was 1 minute ago. But what if our scientist uses the wormhole to shoot his earlier self? He's now dead. So who fired the shot? It's a paradox. Just doesn't make sense. This kind of time machine would violate a fundamental rule that governs the entire universe, that causes happen before effects, and never the other way around. Any kind of time travel to the past through wormholes or any other method is probably impossible. Otherwise, paradoxes would occur. So sadly, it looks like time travel to the past is never going to happen. But the story's not over yet. This doesn't make all time travel impossible. I do believe in time travel to the future. Time flows like a river at different speeds in different places, and that is the key to traveling into the future. The proof is right above our heads, up in space. Right in the center of the Milky Way, 26,000 light years from us, lies the heaviest object in the galaxy. It is a supermassive black hole containing the mass of 4 million suns crushed down into a single point by its own gravity. The closer you get to the black hole, the stronger the gravity. Get really close and not even light can escape. A black hole like this one has a dramatic effect on time, slowing it down far more than anything else in the galaxy. That makes it a natural time machine. But of course, it's not exactly practical. It has advantages over wormholes in that it doesn't provoke paradoxes, but it's pretty dangerous. It's a long way away, and it doesn't even take us very far into the future. Fortunately, there is another way to travel in time, and this represents our last and best hope of building a real time machine. You just have to travel very, very fast. Much faster than the speed required to avoid being sucked into a black hole. And I think the only way we're ever going likely to do that is by going into space. The ship would have to be big enough to carry a huge amount of fuel, enough to accelerate it to nearly the speed of light. Around 30 trillion miles away from Earth and 4 years after launch, the ship would begin to travel in time. For every hour of time on the ship, 2 would pass on Earth. After another 2 years of full thrust, the ship would reach its top speed, 99% of the speed of light. At this speed, a single day on board is a whole year of Earth time. Our ship would be truly flying into the future. And ultimately, we might use our understanding of physics to become true voyagers through the fourth dimension.
Let It Be a Dance is a poem written by Rick Maston in 1977 and published in our hymnal in 1993. A lot happened in those 16 years. My entire adolescence, for example. Stephen Hawking says we can't travel into the past, but what if we could? What if you could travel back in time? Today, I invite you all to take a little trip with me to the summer of 1985. Someone could turn the lights down too, that'd be great. Our UU community has about 75 members in 1985. Kathy and I aren't here yet, but the Slaters are. Gene Wittinger, the Kluths, Liz Erickson, the Eldridges, Olive Hobbs, of course. The service auction is already an annual tradition, as is the Halloween party. We're looking to grow beyond our current status as a fellowship, and our focus is on humanist principles. At this time, Dick Celeste was 2 years into his 8-year stint as governor of Ohio, and this man, Ronald Reagan, was president of the United States. The Cold War was in full swing. The impact of the AIDS crisis was only just beginning to come to light. Michael Jackson's Thriller was fast on its way to becoming the best-selling album of all time. It was a time of big ideas and big hair. The internet basically didn't exist, at least not in a form we would recognize today. And the first commercial cell phones were just coming on the market. They looked something like this. Instead of relying on the internet for entertainment, teenagers focused much of their attention on video games, music videos, and novelty puzzles like this one. And in the summer of 1985, Universal Pictures and Steven Spielberg released a film called Back to the Future, in which a young Marty McFly, played by Michael J. Fox, is accidentally sent 30 years into the past with the help of a lovable eccentric scientist, a time machine built into a DeLorean, and this, the flux capacitor, which is what makes time travel possible. Trapped in 1955, he inadvertently meets and interacts with his own parents, preventing them from meeting and subsequently endangering his own existence. This creates what physicists like Stephen Hawking commonly refer to as a temporal paradox. Marty then has less than a week to get his parents to fall in love, fix his time machine, and use it to return to his own timeline. I was 16, and I knew right away that this was the greatest movie ever made. I wasn't alone. Back to the Future went on to be nominated for 4 Academy Awards and 4 Golden Globes. Its many diehard fans have bestowed it with what only can be described as a cult classic status. Excuse me. For the next 2 years, the film saw heavy rotation on HBO, and I probably watched it dozens of times in that period leading up to high school graduation. It was no huge surprise that the movie became a favorite of mine. I've always been a big fan of the time travel genre. The idea that one could travel forward or backward in time, do things over again, do them better, erase mistakes, relive history, heck, rewrite history. Be young again. It's intoxicating stuff. This week, my niece Danny and my cousin Tim will be moving into their respective dorm rooms and beginning their college careers at Kent State. They're 18, and they've got a whole lifetime of living to get started on. It's an exciting and emotional time for them and for their friends and families as they pack up their belongings and move away from home, leaving the protective environment where they grew up for the great unknown filled with possibility. I'm really excited for them. I remember that time of my life. I'm sure many of you do too. It's hard to believe it was 27 years ago. When I look back to the late 80s, to the person I was then, I can still see him inside me. In some ways, I'm still that young person you see on the cover of your programs. Part man, part boy, smart, optimistic, dorky, invulnerable, filled with potential. And yet, in other ways, he's completely alien to me. And I'm not just talking about his questionable hairstyle or clothing choices. What did he think about? What did he want from life? What were his hopes and dreams? His unspoken fears? When he was alone with his thoughts, did he really deep down like who he was? Did he even know who he was or who he could be? What if you could travel in time? What if you could talk to your younger self? What advice would you give that person? With Danny and Tim about to begin this bold new time in their lives, I've been thinking about it a lot. So here's a few things I'd like to say to my younger self. First, I'd remind him not to take himself too seriously. Because everything that's going to happen to young Saul, the good, the bad, the seemingly unbearable, will eventually become a part of his backstory. They're all part of the chain of events that conspires to turn him into the person he's going to become, which, incidentally, is me. And I like me. I'm pretty sure he will, too. So I'd tell him, dude, don't sweat the small stuff. Grin and bear it through the rough stuff. Get help when you need it. There are plenty of people ready to help if you let them. So let them. Celebrate the good stuff. Laugh a lot. I guarantee you there'll be a lot to laugh about. Even some of that stuff that doesn't seem so great now is going to be great fodder for jokes and stories and Sunday sermons down the road. Now, young Saul's not likely to understand that bit about Sunday sermons because at this point in his life, he's pretty sure his church-going days are over. But maybe when he and his friends are pulled over by the police with a car full of milk crates they stole from the local dairy distributor in an effort to furnish their dorm rooms, and he's charged with theft and forced to sell his saxophone to pay his legal fees, he won't be quite so scared or depressed or feel quite so alone. Maybe he'll be able to call his parents and tell them without feeling so ashamed. Maybe. Maybe he'd be able to see how rife with humorous potential his situation really is. And maybe 18 years later, when as a part of the international adoption process, he's required to write a letter to the People's Republic of China explaining the details of his criminal conviction and how he's completely rehabilitated and therefore capable of becoming a suitable parent. Maybe he'll somehow be able to put it all in perspective. Perhaps he'll realize how lucky he was to face such trivial consequences, or even begin to understand the privilege he had as a young white man when others might have faced harsher punishment. Again, perspective. Secondly, I'd tell him, be self-deprecating when you can. Because while self-confidence is attractive, arrogance is not a good look for you. I'm not saying you should downplay your strengths or put on false modesty. I'm saying it's okay to acknowledge that your approach to something may not be the right path for everyone. People are going to respond to you a lot more positively when you don't act as if you know everything. Because as soon as young Saul realizes that he doesn't always have the answer, that other approaches, other ways of thinking are just as valid as his, he'll start to become more accepting, less judgmental, an all-around better person. He'll also have a chance to hear a lot of great ideas and meet a lot of great people. People who won't agree with him every time, and that's good. Because maybe then he'll refrain from calling into that radio station in protest after he hears Show Me the Way by Styx, remixed with audio clips of loved ones sending messages of support to soldiers during the first Gulf War. And if he still can't stop himself, maybe when the DJ puts him in his place by saying, "Come on, man, there's a lot of people hurting out there. We're just trying to do a little something to help these families," he'll realize that not all issues are as black and white as they first appear. Thirdly, I'm pretty sure young Saul needs to hear this. Drink less beer. Really, you don't even really like beer. While you're at it, use this newfound sobriety as an opportunity to take your schoolwork more seriously. Are you ready for some tough love? Good, because here it comes. You're smart, but you're not nearly as smart as you think you are, and you are not a great student. If you want to do well, you're going to have to work at it. If he can manage that, maybe he'll feel a little bit better about himself. And maybe his parents won't have to spend quite so much time and energy wondering if all the money they've invested in his education has become a colossal waste of resources. Maybe he'll begin to see his class assignments for what they are, opportunities to learn and grow, rather than obstacles to overcome or obligations to be met. Maybe he won't have to invent a death in the family to cover up the fact that he missed an in-class exam in English composition. Yes, I was that guy. Maybe he won't completely skip a Physics 2 final for the sake of a really great spades hand. Maybe. Perhaps he'll even be able to carry that thinking forward to other facets of his life, work, relationships, family life. Once he realizes that he's always learning, that he's never going to be done with education, maybe he'll enjoy it more. Fourth, and here's where it gets interesting, young Saul. Instead of that liquid courage derived from adult beverages, focus on the courage you'll find within yourself. Use that courage to make bold, adventurous choices. Try new things. Do what you love, even if it takes you a while to figure out what that is. Take frequent, honest inventory of yourself. Embrace the things you like. Change the things you don't. It's never too late to reinvent yourself. Easier said than done, but it'll be easier to do it now, to experiment while you're young, when the risks are low. If he balks at this, I'll remind him of the person he was in high school and how he'd already learned to reinvent his outward appearance. He just needs to apply that same reinvention to the person within. If he can master that, then maybe when his academic career in electrical engineering begins to peter out due to lack of interest, he won't spend so long agonizing over what to do about it. Maybe he won't be so scared or embarrassed to try something new, like an acting class, or a drawing class, or a bowling class. Who knows what he might discover within himself? A graphic designer, maybe a sculptor, maybe a copy store guru, maybe a father, maybe even an amateur preacher. Fifth, I'd get all up in young Saul's personal space, and I'd speak really quietly so he knew what I was about to say was really important. Love is out there. Worry less about whether you will ever find the right person, and more about being the kind of person you'll want to be when you do. Someone who loves their family openly and completely. Someone who loves to learn and actively seeks out opportunities to do so. Someone who drinks in moderation because they're already courageous and adventurous and happy with who they are. And if you can't get that all together at once, don't worry. The right person will help you get there. Because it's true. Love is out there. And it takes on many forms. It may be one person. It may be a whole group of people. It may be a trusted animal companion. But it's out there. And if young Saul really wants to find it, he's going to have to learn how to love himself. If he wants to be worthy of the kind of love he's hoping for, he's going to have to spend less time mooning over the saxophone player who sits next to him in band class, less time pining after that young artist from Nebraska who really only wanted a shoulder to cry on, and fewer evenings moping in his room about why he doesn't have a girlfriend yet. He's going to have to get to work becoming the best possible version of himself that he can, and actively seeking out the love that already exists in his life and making the most of it. Lastly, I'd encourage him to recognize that family is more than the people he happens to share DNA with. So go, young Saul, figure out who your family is and start appreciating them more. Really, starting now. Because the people that are truly important in his life, the ones that stick by him and support him from halfway across the country, and the ones who pack up and move all the way to Ohio to be closer to him, and all the ones who he meets along the way, all of you here, those are the people to cherish. Those are his family. And sure, some of them are related to him by blood, and some of them by shared experience, and some by shared belief, but they are his chosen family. And down the road, when his efforts to start a biological family of his own have faltered, when the roller coaster of infertility has run its course without success, maybe then he'll start to understand what family really means. What it means to take someone into his heart without hesitation, without regret, without regard for his own well-being. What it means to be a father, a caregiver, a nurturer. To welcome another person into his ever-growing family. To be truly blessed. I can tell it's time to wrap up. Young Saul's eyes are starting to glass over. Maybe yours are too. Before I do, I'll let you in on a little secret. When I first started writing this sermon, its working title was Six Truths and a Lie. And if you've been keeping track out there, you'll notice I've already filled my quota for truth-telling today. So, spoiler alert, the next words out of my mouth will be a lie. This list of truths you see up here will help you live a better life. The fact is, they won't. Because these are my truths. And if being a UU has taught me anything, it's that we all have our own set of truths to discover. Truths that are formed and framed by our own experiences. It's doubtful even that this set of truths would have been very helpful to the 18-year-old Saul. Because his experiences, his framework, his priorities, his truths are very different from mine. And if Back to the Future has taught me anything, it's that monkeying around with the past can have unforeseen consequences. If I actually was able somehow to speak to my younger self, to give him the benefit of my knowledge and experience, to prevent him from making some of the same mistakes I made, wouldn't I run the same risks as Marty? Wouldn't I be, in a sense, endangering my own existence? Because when all is said and done, what are we if not the sum of our experiences? What would I be without the mistakes I've made and the lessons I've learned along the way? So let's not go back. Instead, let's go forward to learn, to love, to succeed, to fail, and above all, to enjoy the journey. Thank you.
Stephen Hawking says time travel into the past is impossible, and Saul tells us to move forward. Even Huey Lewis in the news wants us to get back in time to the present, the here and now. Easier said than done. Two nights ago, I stood in Fred Fuller Park at the edge of the playground where my three-year-old daughter was cautiously and quietly exploring the equipment, avoiding, when she could, any contact with her peers. Suddenly, I wasn't watching my daughter anymore. I was seeing my painfully shy self wandering around, waiting for my parents to end the torture and just take me home already so I could play by myself away from all of these kids. The sensation was so intense, so vivid, that when a friend stopped to ask me how my work was going, I could barely utter a few sentences about my summer regrets. In mere seconds, I had traveled 40 years back in time and then forward again. I was exhausted. There are moments like this one when our past sneak up on us. We are reminded of our younger selves and the faces around us. A photo or a song or a dream takes us back to an earlier time. Or maybe we dwell too long on that list of to-dos that didn't get done. Regrets, small and large, keep us from moving forward into the future. They keep us from enjoying the journey. In time travel stories, protagonists have sometimes relied on artifacts from the time periods they visit to get them where they need to go. In real life, I think we need these touchstones to stay in the present, to let go of the past, to help us enjoy the journey. We all have our touchstones. Maybe yours is a person, or maybe it's a place. Maybe you need to hold yours in your hand, or maybe you just feel it in your heart. One of my touchstones is this community of faith. It is here with Saul, with all of you, that I find my way back, where I learn to let go, how I find joy in the journey, and always, love is the guide.
From Henry David Thoreau, let go of the past and go for the future. Go confidently in the direction of your dreams. Live the life you imagined. Go in peace.